Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to the heat wave. It's so hot here that Chris Hayes is now telling us the Democrats who made an infrastructure deal without the quote unquote climate stuff are utterly mad. This is the kind of Democrat-on-Democrat fight you don't often see on cable news. Our intern in the summer, Kevin Tober, noted that Hayes even used the Surfside building collapse to make a climate argument. He is shameless, so check that out. Our hottest topic today is the vote-counting debacle in the New York City mayor's race. We're more than a week out now. And this is not the top network story. It's only the biggest city in America where all the networks are headquartered. And they announced, oops, we somehow in our counting entered 130,000 test ballots. Oops. It's a story of big city Democrat incompetence. So what would we expect? ABC and CBS and NBC weren't going to be all over this. Ari Fleischer tweeted, the fight in New York City over absentee ballots in the mayor's race, which took place more than a week ago, is going to be fierce, with D's accusing each other of voter suppression, sometimes based on race. Ooh. Rich Lowry at National Review tweeted, another election debacle brought to you by the city with politicians and journalists who incessantly complain and make the direst accusations about how the rest of the country runs its elections. Bingo. If you've spent months now attacking Florida and Georgia and Texas for somehow trying to disenfranchise the minorities, maybe you ought to take a look at New York City. They did get on this today on CNN's New Day. Their political forecaster, Harry Enten, right at the top of the show, said this board of elections, as a resident of this city for pretty much my entire life, it's been a disgrace. This is just the latest example of a problem of this city board of elections. I love this part. If, God forbid, New York City was in a swing state, I could just imagine what might be happening if the stakes were even higher than this. This is just a Democrat primary, which will probably decide who's mayor in most cases. Sometimes New York has a Republican mayor. Sometimes it has a Rhino mayor, like Michael Bloomberg, but it's not always a Democrat mayor. Rudy Giuliani wasn't a Democrat mayor. Most of these cities, like Chicago, haven't had a mayor in decades, but New York at least has. John Avlon was also on New Day. I think this is the second half hour of the show. He called the Board of Elections corrupt and incompetent. He said this thing needs to be ripped up and reformed and turned into a nonpartisan professional organization, not some relic at Tammany Hall that managed to screw up everything it touches.
There is absolutely no reason to take the Board of Elections at its word, particularly because I question whether they're organized enough to run 135,000 test ballots, let alone, given the fact they're too incompetent, to erase that total, apparently, from the numbers they initially released. Look, folks nationally may be scratching their heads. Folks in New York know this all too well. The New York City Board of Elections is a corrupt, incompetent patronage organization.
For you young people, the reference to Tammany Hall is all about Boss Tweed. It's a very old story. Erica Hill obviously sensed the danger here that if the totally Democratic-controlled New York City Board of Elections is corrupt and incompetent, what might that say about election officials in, Atlanta, where CNN is based, or Chicago, or Detroit, or Philadelphia? So she suggested to Avlon, this is uniquely a New York City problem. Avlon said, yes, it is. He also said, I love this, if New York City Board of Elections had been in the Deep South, this thing would have been the subject of a DOJ takeover a long time ago. Yes, where is Merrick Garland? Merrick Garland, on the heels of the Democrats not passing their For the People Act, sued the state of Georgia. Somehow Georgia was disenfranchising minorities. Where is Merrick Garland? I had a blog about the New York Times. Lisa Lehrer, their national political correspondent, wrote a political memo, quote unquote. She noted that Eric Adams, who emerged as the leading Democrat in this primary, focused much of his campaign message on denouncing progressive slogans and policies that he said threatened the lives of black and brown babies and were being pushed by, quote, a lot of young, white, affluent people. Can you imagine that? Young, affluent white people who are woke, who think they're the ones who can truly speak for the blacks. Lehrer noted black and brown voters in Brooklyn and the Bronx flocked to Eric Adams, awarding him with sizable leading margins in neighborhoods from East Chester to East New York. The Times was alarmed to find a disconnect between progressive activists and the rank and file black and Latino voters. They say they have the most to gain from their agenda. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez somehow doesn't have her finger on the pulse of the black and brown voters. As liberal activists orient their policies to combat white supremacy, progressives are finding many voters of color seem to think about the issues a bit differently. Oh, isn't this interesting? Also, we have written about, column today is about Vogue magazine doing a big puffy cover story on Jill Biden. There's this annoying tendency where Democrats like to pretend that everyone is a Democrat. So Vogue's cover pushes Jill Biden as a first lady for all of us. Technically true, emotionally false. No one can imagine that Vogue would put Melania Trump on the cover. They didn't. They certainly wouldn't say, Melania Trump, a first lady for all of us. Jonathan Van Meter, who wrote this Sugar Puff cover story, said in many ways, Dr. Biden is perfectly calibrated for this moment. Thus far, a nearly pomp-free presidency. Well, who needs pomp when you've got liberal journalists to tell you you're awesome? Then he quotes, oh, please call me Jill, she will say to people in formal settings who sometimes stumble over how to address her. She's not a please call me Jill person. She insists on being called Dr. Jill. You want to upset her, call her Mrs. Biden. So yes, of course people stumble over how to address her because she's had a major fit over not being called Dr. Jill. And then the networks all run around and say, how dare you not call her Dr. Jill? So of course the Vogue puff story isn't enough to just be in Vogue. It gets onto television. ABC's Good Morning America aired several minutes of puffball publicity. Nobody reads Vogue magazine for the hard facts. They read it for puffballs about Democrats. And of course, the ABC's all there for that. Reporter Janae Norman said that Jill Biden told the magazine, I want the White House to feel comfortable. It's like my beach house where you feel like you can just come in and your bathing suit is sandy, but it's okay to sit down on the chair. Yeah, come on. Again, I mean, she's trying to say, I'm not uptight. Well, I'd like to see somebody actually walk into the White House in flip-flops and a sandy swimming suit and see how that would be treated. ABC went to Chioma Nadi, editor of Vogue.com, who said Jill Biden has embraced her role with both hands. She's also kept her role as a teacher. You know, she's extremely inspiring as someone who can multitask with a smile on her face. I mean, this is what happens. So you get Dr. Jill Biden, who gets a cover story from Vogue, which is complete Democrat propaganda. Then they take the Democrat propaganda onto ABC News. ABC News repeats it all. This is sort of the assembly line we saw for Hillary Clinton. This was the assembly line we saw for Michelle Obama. It's the sort of thing no one ever expected they were going to do for Laura Bush, let alone Melania Trump. The cover story comes with a bunch of pretty posed pictures of Jill with Joe, of Jill with the precious Biden grandkids, all carefully posed with smug little grins, no teeth showing, all by star photographer Annie Leibovitz. We're told that Jill in this picture wears a Michael Kors Collection sweater and skirt. And then troubling topics like Hunter Biden and his little laptop are all carefully airbrushed out. This is publicity. It's not news. People call these things news shows, but they're not news shows. They didn't do this for Melania Trump. However, 3 years ago in 2018, Vogue celebrated porn star Stormy Daniels, complete with those pretty Annie Leibovitz portraits, Stormy in a nice blue gown, described as a catalyst of historic proportions because they felt she was going to make history by ruining the Trumps. That didn't exactly work out. Michael Avenatti didn't end up ruining the Trumps. Michael Avenatti ended up ruined. That's just kind of the way the ball bounces. It doesn't matter how it actually turns out. It just turns out this is a publicity machine. It's not a news machine. It is a propaganda press that's meant to make the First Lady look fabulous as long as the First Lady is a Democrat. We'll have more with Alex Hall after this.
MRC-store.com.
Pro-gun, pro-life, pro-God, and pro-America? Welcome to the Pro Shop.
MRC-store.com.
T-shirts, hoodies, goodies, and much more.
MRC-store.com.
The only store that always offers conservatives more.
That's MRC-store.com.
Log on, log in, and help the Media Research Center while shopping for great gear today.
MRC-store.com.
We are back with today's guest, Alexander Hall from our Free Speech America Project and his Tech Shark video series. You can find him at Twitter at Alex Tech Shark. I don't know if you have an official theme song, but you've been writing a bunch of stuff lately that I think is interesting that people should check out on the censorship front. Yeah. I was fascinated by our friends at the Babylon Bee, which we enjoy on a pretty much daily basis. Facebook now had some sort of notice where they were like, we got to curb the satire. There's certain kinds of satire we just can't allow. And let me start by just quoting, I guess it was Seth Dillon you have here, where he said, he tweeted, "The image on the left is Facebook saying true satire doesn't punch down. The image on the right is Slate, the liberal website, saying the Babylon Bee has a nasty tendency to punch down." Then he said, "If you can't see where this is going next, you're blind."
Yeah, absolutely. They're definitely taking the angle of, we like free speech, but just not hate speech. And even lefties like Noam Chomsky said, if you don't support speech for people you hate, then you don't support free speech at all. And so in this case, I mean, this is a sort of set him up, I set him up and you knock him down scenario, where Facebook hinted that while they approve of satire, they say that anything that, quote, punches down, meaning targets a group they want protected, does not qualify under sort of satire protections. And then Slate saw that and is like, oh, okay, well, guess who is punching down? The Babylon Bee. So they're setting it up so then Facebook has a pretext to then restrict or ban the Babylon Bee.
That's what I think that what's interesting about this is that they're quite explicit about what punching down means. And it means we have this set of predetermined victims that you're not allowed to punch down, and that would include racial minorities, sexual or gender minorities, and to some extent religious minorities, at least Islamic minorities, political correctness is coming in here. So, I mean, look, we're headed in this country to a point where all the religious people are going to constitute a minority. You know, by that standard, we could say, well, the Catholics are 25% of America, and we know that a lot of them aren't really going to church. But, you know, it's that, I think this is exactly what people object to, which is, oh, some people have victim status, which makes them more precious.
Right. They act like people living in rural parts of, like, West Virginia in, like, say, a trailer park somewhere. Like, they have all the power. They have all the power. You know what? What they say goes in academia, the media, and all of that. It's like no. In fact, they are probably one of the least represented groups in this country, even though a lot of their ancestors probably were the first frontiersmen here.
They might presume, knowing the way that people in Silicon Valley or Manhattan think, you know, do they have Wi-Fi in West Virginia? You know, but this is kind of the point, and that is that they're basically saying there's certain subjects that aren't funny.
Right. You're not allowed to joke about certain people or about certain things. Yeah, that's definitely seems to be it. And the Babylon Bee, you see, here's the thing. As a person who comes from an entertainment background, it's so good to see conservative entertainment that doesn't make me cringe.
Bingo.
And the Babylon Bee gets it just right. Conservatives need satire because, by God, this is an era worth satirizing to hell and back, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, that they are addressing a niche which really does need to be fixed because more and more liberals are surrendering humor and conservatives are slowly taking that ground because there's so much that even liberals can't joke about anymore. Yeah. And that's why so many comedians just are not funny.
Well, I think that they've all decided that being funny on for its own merit isn't achieving enough politically. So, yes, you get Colbert and you get Kimmel coming out and doing the nightly lecture instead of being comedians. But, I mean, I think that in this particular case, yeah, there's certain things the Babylon Bee's done that sometimes you go, okay. Some of the stuff they do, you'd look at it and go, ho, 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 that seems to be crossing a line. That's part of what makes it funny. Mm-hmm. But this is the whole problem, is that we know that they say things about conservatives or religious people. We've got a guy wearing a dress to the BET Awards that equates the Catholics with the Nazis. That's not going to get shut down. They're not going to say, geez, we need to look at Lil Nas X and all his social media accounts.
Mm-hmm.
It's so you would say somebody who is black and gay is super protected under these rules, and you can't. You have to be nervous about things you can and cannot make fun of now for fear of being canceled.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, there definitely are so many double standards like that all across the country, and the question facing our time is how are we going to systemically address it? Because when you look at big tech right now, there is a system that benefits some people and specifically is at the expense of others. They're not treating conservatives, Christians, and so on the same way they are other groups. And now we see big tech is allied with the media in order to create pretext to wipe people off the map, more
yes,
or less.
Which takes me to topic two, which is we have this group called Right Wing Watch, which was temporarily deplatformed, which we found kind of funny. I think we probably knew that wasn't going to last. But it comes from this group terribly named People for the American Way. I mean, these are people that this is, again, they're trying to say we have to shut people down. They were founded by Norman Lear with the idea of, they literally ran ads in the 80s about, hey, you can have an opinion on anything. It's America. No, that's not what People for the American Way is now. But they were very upset that YouTube basically had said, the more you expose so-called election fraud theories or whatever, you could tell YouTube was kind of imprecise and technical, because you'd think if somebody was looking at it, they'd all go, Right Wing Watch? We can't possibly suspend Right Wing Watch. So, of course, they fixed it within a couple of hours. But isn't it weird that somebody who's trying to deplatform everybody else is utterly outraged when it happens to them.
Oh, exactly. I mean, what was so funny about this in particular is that usually when we see these major quote-unquote errors, at least for me, it almost always seems to be against the right. They mistakenly or whatever, ban this account or this account, just whatever platform, and it so often happens to right-wing conservative figures. Whereas this was one rare case when it happened to a very left-wing group. And that was so fascinating to watch. And this group really is a piece of work because they more or less, they are sort of like a cancel culture platform more or less that takes, you know, things that conservatives say out of context and then tries to get those people destroyed or whatever, ruin their careers ended. And, you know, that's really just a symptom of our time is that you could take any person and you could find all the worst or most controversial things they've said and make them seem like a monster or something. But people, that's not really how actual life works. But these people come at it through such bad faith tactics. So they'll find the controversial things that conservative people say and then say, this stuff is not allowed. Meanwhile, they're completely okay with people on their side saying the exact equivalent and far worse. So yeah, it's absolute nonsense. This is a absolutely terrible organization.
I think that the problem with this, and this I think is a larger concern when we talk about big tech and censorship, and that is they'll say, well, we're against hate and disinformation. Okay. And we as conservatives can say, when I start to put something on social media, when I start to write an article on the internet, I don't want to be hateful. I think that's a good goal. I don't want to misinform people. That's a good goal, too. I don't want to be on the wrong side of that line. But as we've suggested, it seems to me that it's just the subjects. There are certain subjects you can't possibly discuss. For example, you couldn't possibly be critical of transgender ideology or transgender activists. That gets you in trouble. You can't say anything critical. Merely disagreeing with them about, I'm sorry, there are men and women, is now hate and disinformation.
Yeah, what we have more or less is a both corporate and state-enforced religion that people don't think of as a religion, so then it doesn't really apply to First Amendment protections. Because this really is, I remember when I was actually going to a Catholic university, and you could potentially get in far more trouble for denying transgender ideology than you could get in for denying God's existence or the afterlife or whatever. And that really showed to me what is the real dominant religion at play. And clearly, when they say some of this gender stuff, it's clearly not scientific. And yet these people are treating it as a objective fact that they can enforce systemically.
Yeah. Now, speaking of, as we run down this list of things that you people, that's objectionable, are chronicling things that conservatives getting suspended. TikTok and Steven Crowder. Steven Crowder has been banned from China's TikTok viral video platform. This is always kind of funny. Oh, gosh, the Chinese censoring somebody. Who's ever heard of that? But this, in this case, the people who boasted in favor of this is Media Matters, which is not a group we discuss much around here. But you can't really avoid it in this case because they boasted very much that they were responsible for getting Steven Crowder removed from TikTok.
I think it says a lot that so many people are absolutely terrified of Crowder because Crowder is genuinely funny. He makes politics hilarious and interesting, and he's great at recruiting youth. And any time that you see a conservative figure who's very popular with youth, liberals get absolutely outraged because they're worried that somebody is coming into their market, into their territory. And they're like, wait a second, we need to have a monopoly on recruiting youth to our side. Anytime that a conservative comes in, they get absolutely spooked. And so that is really why they want to get rid of him.
I think it's funny that they do. They do seem to want a monopoly. And I guess the way that they would try to argue on this is, okay, this one isn't terrible, but he could be the gateway drug to further radicalization on the internet. I mean, this is sort of the slippery slope.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that definitely is how it is with these figures. And so Crowder, from what I've seen, is absolutely a great guy. And, you know, YouTube has come after him. And, you know, yeah, they're absolutely terrified of him.
So SoundCloud It's another one of these websites. I know our friend Derek Hunter has his show on SoundCloud. They're purging Andy Ngo, the journalist who's exposed Antifa, who wrote a book that somehow ruined the band Mumford and Sons.
Yes,
you can't possibly praise Andy Ngo's book and be a rock star. That you get canceled. Andy Ngo had said, "Big tech is not nonpartisan nor neutral. Being permanently suspended from SoundCloud without knowing why or even having an opportunity to appeal is how it is now."
Yeah, it says a lot. I mean, Andy Ngo really is sort of a brave journalist because he's actually faced physical consequences for being out there on the front lines. Even the Washington Post has called out the Portland-based Rose City Antifa group for reportedly assaulting Ngo. The Post featured a photo captioned, quote, "Unidentified Rose City Antifa members beat up Andy Ngo and an independent journalist," end quote. So yeah, he's definitely a guy who's been on the front lines, and his podcast was recently taken down by SoundCloud, and they were extremely vague in the most dystopian Orwellian way about, you know, why he was taken down. I couldn't really get a coherent response from them. So yeah, this definitely is just a sign of the times, and conservatives really do need a serious answer to this, and I don't think it's going to come from new platforms. I really do think that we need to use the power of government to try to solve this, because we're headed towards that Orwellian scenario, and people need to take action ASAP.
Andy Ngo is fascinating because, yes, violence against journalists, you know, just the idea of it. Brian Stelter and Jim Acosta are running around that calling CNN the enemy of the people is going to cause violence. When there's actual violence against a journalist like this, they didn't speak up for him. And it's worse. NBC News has their journalists assaulted by Antifa. They don't report it. CNN has water bottles thrown at CNN's producers and reporters. They come on Stelter's show and say, "Oh, sorry, we understand their anger." It's just a very bizarre scenario. So that's where you would say, we at the Media Research Center would say, "Hey, if criticizing the media leads to violence, why are you attacking us? Why don't you actually attack the people who actually threw a water bottle at your head and leave us alone?" Now, to keep up with Alex, Free Speech America is there on Newsbusters. CensorTrack.org keeps track of these incidents as well. So make sure you come for all your big tech updates to Newsbusters. See us once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks for listening.